In the run-up to congressional passage of the Affordable Care Act, for that matter, since that time, opponents have characterized the act as a government takeover of health care. But when you compare the American health care system now with other countries, it bears little resemblance to true governmental systems, socialized medicine if you prefer, in countries like Canada. Our guest this hour wishes our system were like Canada's and makes the case that it should be in a documentary called Fix It, Healthcare at the Tipping Point. Richard Master is the founder and owner of MCS Industries, which is in the picture frame and decorative mirror business in Eastern Pennsylvania in the city of Easton. He speaks to the Medford Rogue Rotary this afternoon, and he'll have a public screening of the film tonight with a discussion. That'll be at 5:30 at the Inn at the Commons in downtown Medford. Richard Master, thanks for joining us on The Exchange.
It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Tell us a bit about the company, MCS Industries, and how long it's been around.
I founded MCS Industries in 1980. It was a successor company to an Easton box company that my father started in 1948. We started it on a relatively modest budget and grew it to its current $200 million a year revenue. We're the leading company in the picture frame industry, decorative mirror. If you go into Home Depot, you'll see also our architectural molding. And we're very innovative, but I've been diverted in my attention over the last 2-3 years.
Clearly. How many employees are at the company, and then what would it be like to try to get health care for all of them in a year?
Yeah, we have about 235 employees in our total population, including dependents. Our budget for health care was about $1.5 million. In 2015, the insurance companies, of course, came back and said we need more than $18,000 a family in, as an insurance plan. So they bumped us up to above $20,000. We have now done a little bit more self-insurance, and we managed to get away this year with about a 14% increase in our premiums.
Well, how does the self-insurance part of that work?
Self-insurance is that we've got catastrophic insurance on the back end, and then we give everyone a credit card that would pay for the deductible and the out-of-pocket expenses, and that's on the company. So it just got impossible for the employees, particularly distribution-level, production-level employees, to afford the out-of-pocket expenses in addition to their 20 to 23% of a premium share that they were required to pay.
If somebody had said to you 10 or 15 years ago that you'd be touring the country now speaking in support of single-payer health care, how would that have struck you at that time?
I would have been more than very surprised. Thank you very much. I had this aha moment, you know, about 3 years ago. I was in Santiago, Chile with my son. We were being introduced to his future in-laws. He gets an asthma attack, doesn't have enough firepower left in his inhaler. We run into the local pharmacy expecting to pay about $150 for an inhaler. It was $15. So I turned around and I said, you know, how about my blood pressure medicine, $4, which was, I turned to these two young people, and I said, you know, on this forthcoming marriage, we have to make a commitment to do something about this. Came back to Pennsylvania, talked to a very good friend of mine who was a film producer and director for Biography and Channel, and we got involved. We thought it was going to be a modest project in the beginning. A year and a half later, we were finished with research, touring the country, going up to Canada, considering international circumstances, talking to the highest level of academics and in the medical profession as well, epidemiologists, et cetera, about this problem.
So one of the major points that comes up early in Fix It, Healthcare at the Tipping Point, that's the name of the documentary, is the very friction point that you mentioned, which is healthcare as provided by employers. So let's hear this first clip from the film.
There's all kinds of costs and unintended consequences that come with having your healthcare depend on your job. It may be that you want to move to a different job, or it may be that you got laid off because of a recession or a downturn in the business.
I've talked to people who've told me they've not gotten a raise in 5 years because the money they would otherwise have gotten in raises has gone to insurance companies.
We've created a very fragmented system in which coverage is tied to employment in ways it isn't in most other countries in the world.
So that's a clip from Fix It, Healthcare at the Tipping Point. I mean, so the connection of healthcare to employment is not fairly common around the world anymore. Is that what you found out?
No, you know what? We call it in the United States job lock. You know, there are lots of Americans who are working in jobs that they really don't enjoy, but they can't leave because of benefits, medical benefits being probably the most significant factor in this. You don't have that around the world. You don't have that in Canada because, you know, when you're born, you get a card. And you don't get, you know, a ton of paperwork with that card or these complicated brochures and policies, et cetera, to navigate. You get a card. You go into a hospital or you go to your doctor. You talk to your doctor. The doctor has autonomy, not employed by the government. But he is paid. The government is like the escrow agent. It raises money through the taxation, and it pays the bills.
So it's in theory things should be different under Obamacare. People should be able to go out and buy their policies independent of their employers on an open market, and with tax credits for lower income should be able to find something affordable. That's the Affordable and Affordable Care Act for them. You're not finding that, though?
Well, we're not finding it affordable. You know, a number of insurance companies recently have complained that they're not making enough money, on their policies. Of course, you know, since 2010, when the Affordable Care went into effect, the insurance company stocks went up 10 times. So they're doing quite well. But their model really isn't to control costs. You know, that's a sort of a fallacy in our thinking. Their model is to actually have an increasing and expansion of costs because they make a percentage of the of the total cost. They make about 20 to 25%. On the administrative side.
Okay, let's pick that up when we come back. Richard Masters, our guest, the creator of the documentary Fix It, Healthcare at the Tipping Point, back on the Jefferson Exchange with more from him and you in a minute five. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Richard Master, maybe not a household word, but he's certainly making himself known around the state of Oregon at the moment, touring with Healthcare for All Oregon and a couple of other groups in publicizing concerns about healthcare as it currently exists in America. Richard owns MCS Industries in Easton, Pennsylvania, which makes picture frames and decorative mirrors, and has created a documentary that began with his own efforts to buy healthcare insurance for his employees. The documentary is called Fix It, Healthcare at the Tipping Point. There'll be a public viewing tonight in Medford at 5:30 at the Inn at the Commons in the Siskiyou Banquet Room, and you can go there. It's free, and there'll be a discussion afterward. And you can also join our conversation right here now on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. We were talking about costs just before we hit the break, and your perception that things do cost, healthcare costs more in this country. It's good healthcare by several measures, but it is very expensive healthcare by several other measures. But you think the insurance companies are complicit in this, you're saying?
Well, they're certainly not doing very much to control costs. You know, the entity that is controlling cost is Medicare. CMS, the Center for Medical Services of the federal government, is establishing the basic cost structure for the across the industry. But even CMS, because of for political reasons, is hamstrung by the law. In 2003, for example, we passed the Medicare Part D, which provided pharmaceutical coverage for seniors. And part of that law prevented the government from negotiating price. We negotiate for tanks, we negotiate for corn for our troops, but we don't negotiate with drug companies.
So essentially what happens is drug companies come to the folks providing the drugs through Medicare Part D and say, this is the price.
This is the price, and as a result, in the United States, we pay twice as much, more than any other industrialized country, certainly. About 80% more. I'm not so great at math, but I guess Canada pays about 40% less than we do.
All right, so discussion of the cost certainly comes up in the film, Fix It, Healthcare at the Tipping Point. So let's hear the second clip about what this does to individual payers.
Of a million bankruptcies in the United States, over 60% are associated with medical conditions. And the great majority of those are people who have health insurance.
We went through years of working hard only to lose everything. Lose our home, go bankrupt. What a shameful thing to do to people.
Now, that was said, that same sort of thing was said, Richard, before the passage of the Affordable Care Act. Is it still the case that people can be ruined financially by an illness in their household?
Yes, because people just don't have that much disposable. They don't have reserves. If you look at middle-class families and how many of them have $5,000 or $8,000. So if you pick up an exchange plan, a bronze plan, that it could have $8,000 deductible. That means you've got to, if you have a very serious illness, you've got to come up with that $8,000. So I've talked to some CEOs of hospitals that are in the, serving a not such a affluent population, and they're treating people with the Affordable Care Act insurance policies as charitable patients, because they just don't have the funds to handle the initial deductible.
Let's talk about the project itself and how it appears to have radiated outward. You mentioned traveling to Canada, which comes up later in the film. But, I mean, some of the people that you talked to, you're in the film. Some other people who work for MCS Industries are in the film as well. Did this start as sort of an in-house thing and grow from there? Let's talk about the process.
Well, we started by trying to reenact what happened in Chile. We also interviewed all of our employees. Very interesting. The ones who had medical problems and had, financial problems as a result were certainly aggrieved. We had an employee who was making $18 an hour in our distribution center, whose husband had hepatitis C. She said, that she had no real concerns and was very happy with her health insurance plan. Until her husband got sick. And at that point, she had an overall medical expense of $10,000 in deductibles, out-of-pocket, copays, et cetera. And if she wondered what would happen if she got sick. It would be 45, 50% of her income, and she would lose her house. And these are people that are in my work family. People that I have worked with for years and years. We have, people have been with the company for 30, 40 years. They tend to enjoy and stay with MCS, and we appreciate them. I just couldn't see how I, as an employer, or any other employer in the United States, could allow this to happen.
Was there any point when you thought, I'll just pay them more and let them go find their own stuff on the marketplace? Did you ever get to a point where you considered dropping health coverage directly?
No, we didn't think we should do that. And certainly, you need to compete with other employers, and employers in general, at least at my level of operation, do need to provide health insurance, do need to provide benefits, and we feel responsible to do that. So we never said, go out and do this on your own. I didn't think that was responsible.
All right. So let's hear about this employer perspective, though, about how much money comes out of the employer's accounts when you're talking about buying health insurance for workers, because that's another part of this film, Fix It, Healthcare at the Tipping Point.
Shouldn't happen where you're hired for a job and then to find out that they're going broke because they're trying to afford health care for me.
The current costs of the system are becoming intolerable. And as they become intolerable, their business naturally is going to look for other solutions.
It distracts businesses from doing their primary function, precludes them being able to budget for hiring, for investment, for expanding their enterprise.
Why are we creating an extra hurdle for business? It's tough enough out there. Why are we making it harder for people to provide goods and services to the American public while employing people and providing tax revenues?
I often ask folks that I work with who own businesses, Tell me one thing in your business that you spend, the kind of money you spend on health insurance, that adds no value to your business.
It adds no value to your business. Well, I mean, it makes you a little more attractive to employees, potential employees. But beyond that, I mean, what does paying health care do for the bottom line at your company?
Well, it may provide us with a cadre of healthy employees, but it is an inefficient way to run a healthcare system. You know, we have an HR department. We have a person who has to be responsible for benefits. We have to hire a broker, and that takes 4 cents out of the premium dollar to do that now. And then we have to, contract with an insurance company, and that takes 20 cents out of that premium dollar. And we're not getting the dollar to the providers of care, and that's the big problem, the administrative cost in this system. And it doesn't exist in other systems. It doesn't exist in the single-payer world, which is really the industrialized the model for the industrialized world.
You mentioned, what was it, 14% rate increase in the rates for medical insurance just between 2015 and 2016?
That's correct. That's correct.
Was the rate coming up higher before the Affordable Care Act clicked in with 2014?
2014 to 2015, we're every year we're at high double digit, and we experienced some significant illnesses. We had two hepatitis C sufferers that benefited from a new medication, a new cure that is remarkable, but also remarkably expensive. I mean, one of them last year cost $195,000, one patient.
Really?
Just in medication alone, $255,000 for a course of treatment.
Was the indication from the insurer that this is why the rates were going up, or were the rates going up? Were they going to go up anyway?
Certainly, every year you get a list of what your experience is, and yes, there are three or four incidents in a field of 240 that can really take a company down. About 60% of our bill was related to pharmaceutical drugs. We had 2,400 refills of prescriptions. 18 of them resulted in about 50% of the cost. Incredible. So these specialty drugs are really driving the increase in cost in the United States.
Richard Master owns a business in eastern Pennsylvania called MCS Industries, in the picture frame and decorative mirror business. He is going on tour with his documentary called Fix It, Healthcare at the Tipping Point. The tour brings him to Medford today and tonight with an open session for the public to view the film at 5:30 at the Inn at the Commons in Medford, free. And no registration necessary. There will be a discussion afterward. You can join our discussion about single-payer health care right here, right now on the Jefferson Exchange. It's something that seems near and dear to the hearts of a number of our listeners. Join us with your stories, your questions, your comments at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Let's pick up another clip from the film, because this is something that people are noticing. Famously, President Obama, infamously, I suppose, said you will be able to keep your doctor. And a number of people, myself included, have discovered that when you went for the cheaper plan, you couldn't keep the doctor you had under the old plan. So this is something that doctors talk about as well.
As a primary care physician, I have selected the specialists that I'm most comfortable working with. As it stands right now, I've got to say to my staff, check if Dr. Brown is a member of this patient's insurance. And so referrals are so much more limited in the current system.
People have precious little choice today. Frequently, people will look at their plan and realize that their doctor is not on any of their plans.
The choice we need is not choice between insurance companies. As a matter of fact, we don't choose our insurance companies in general. It's your employer, if you're getting your insurance through an employer, that chooses the insurance company. And that's really not based on the quality of the insurance most of the time. Most of the time, it's based on the cost of the employer.
So, Richard Master, when you as an employer are shopping for insurance plans, is it as explicit as you get this provider or these providers for X number of dollars, you get an additional set of providers for X times 0.25 dollars?
In general, that's not the case. In particularly in our area, you know, we're in a relatively small area of Pennsylvania. So our major healthcare networks are brought into the plan. That was Dr. Moore from Bedford-Stuyvesant in Brooklyn.
Brooklyn. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they have a much more restricted panels there, and that is a big problem. Dr. Moore actually decided to throw insurance companies out of his practice. He became a single payer doctor. He took government plans alone, and he said because the insurance company were giving him basically 10 minutes to talk to a patient. We're giving him so much flack in getting reimbursements. So, but. I hope I'm being responsive to your question.
that's not exactly the situation that exists. Okay, yeah. You've set me straight on that. But
in a lot of communities, it's not the situation that exists. But of course, it depends on the kind of insurance. Apparently, it existed for you that you could not go to the doctor of your choice. Well, you know, for example, in Canada, you get a card and you can go to any doctor in the province. So there is complete freedom of choice. And the doctors are really not employed by the healthcare system, as they are in the United States more and more. We've actually collectivized our doctors into these large healthcare networks.
So let's shift the discussion then to single payer, because this is where all this is ultimately aimed and what you're making a case for here. We'll get into some of the clips from Canada in just a moment. But you've visited, I noticed, in Western Oregon with business leaders and Rotary clubs.
Yes.
and other people who might not be disposed to like this idea. And I'm curious about what kinds of reactions you've been getting.
Curiously enough, we're getting a very favorable reaction about the situation, you know, that cost is going up, that it's unaffordable, that some of the smaller businesses have had to jettison off coverage because they just can't afford it. They may be raising their wages a little bit and asking people to go out into the marketplace and getting coverage themselves, but they are very distressed. At the same time, you know, it's a very confusing situation, and it's huge. We're talking about 18% of GDP. We're talking about insurance companies that really control about $1.7 trillion of economic activity in the United States, 10% of the overall gross domestic product of the country, you know, a trillion dollars in insurance, and about another $700 billion in contract work that they do for governments, for Medicare and Medicaid. So this is really very confusing for people. They don't know exactly what to do. But you have, fortunately, organizations in Oregon that are working on this. Healthcare for All Oregon is a umbrella organization for over 100 other civic organizations that are banding together. They have a strategy, and they want to establish a single-payer system here in Oregon. And they have done internal feasibility studies, and it will work. It will save money. It'll save a couple thousand dollars ultimately for every Oregonian. But it is a huge challenge to do this politically and to set up the structure to accomplish that result.
So in this case, you're talking a state-by-state kind of
setup
for single-payer system?
Yeah. You know, because the Affordable Care Act has pretty much taken the air out of the room in Washington. It was passed, very contentious passage, and incredible number of attempts to defeat it after it's passed. A constitutional challenge, and people are tired of it. you know, the members of Congress are frustrated and tired of it.
I wonder, though, if you're aware of the Cover Oregon debacle, where Oregon's health exchange setup was a multi-million dollar
yes.
disaster, and whether that might impact people trusting government enough to do something in the healthcare realm like that, though.
Yes. You know, I've heard about it. You know, I'm not that familiar and can't speak, you know, authoritatively on it. But certainly this is done in other countries. It is the international standard. And it's actually a pretty simple thing to establish.
All right. So let's talk about one of the major concerns about single payer. We got about a minute to a break here. I just want to warn you that okay. we get stories of people waiting a long time to see doctors in single payer systems. You did go to Canada, or at least your crew went to Canada. What'd they find out?
That the public in Canada loves the system. You know, you look at 80% public opinion approval, it's 70-80% in Canada, and you look at public approval of our system, you know, 65-70% of the people think our system is unaffordable and is not really working for the benefit. So I think that there's, a lot of, support for the system. Are there issues in Canada? Certainly. Are they necessarily related to a single-payer system? You see single-payer systems around the world that don't have any wait times. Now, Canada doesn't have wait times for acute illness, but it may have wait times in various sectors of the system. We have wait times also in the United States.
All right. Richard Masters, our guest on The Exchange. He is the creator of the documentary Fix It, Healthcare at the Tipping Point, and a business owner himself. We'll come back and talk more about his case for single payer. I see some phone calls waiting. We will take those as well when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 15. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking today about health care, specifically single-payer health care, as advocated in a documentary called Fix It, Healthcare at the Tipping Point, put together through the efforts of Richard Master, who owns a company that makes picture frames and decorative mirrors in Easton, Pennsylvania. He's taking the film on tour in Oregon, supported by Healthcare for All Oregon and Physicians for a National Health Program Oregon and the Main Street Alliance. Showing for the public tonight at 5:30. This is this evening, Friday, May 27th, at the Inn at the Commons, Siskiyou Banquet Room in Medford. It is free and open to the public, but you can join the conversation with Richard Master about single-payer health care right here on The Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. We've talked a little bit about the Canadian health care system thus far. I want to get in a clip from the film that deals with Canadian doctors and some of their perspective on this. So let's hear the Canada clip.
As a Canadian physician, I sort of laugh when I hear people talk about government, you know, telling me what to do or government-run healthcare. That's certainly not been my experience of working in the Canadian healthcare system. I have an enormous degree of clinical autonomy.
People seem to think that because there's a single payer, that you are working for the government.
Okay.
You're an employee. They tell you what to do. Nothing could be further from the truth.
Just take a listen. See how blood pressure's doing today.
I'm in practice. I'm a small business person. They're not running my business for me. They don't come in and review me and tell me, you're not doing this right, you're not doing that right. They're the ones that pay me for the work that I do.
So right after that clip, Richard Master, and it didn't translate well to radio because it involved an actual clock on the corner of the screen, but there's the video of the person at the doctor's office billing the government health care
yes,
system.
Yes, that's correct. It takes about 12 seconds.
Yeah, a little more, 13 and change.
Oh,
but,
I'm
yeah,
sorry.
So yeah, you're off by a whole second here, Richard. But what about the quality of the system? What could you ascertain? I mean, there were things there. Obviously, you can make comparisons in your mind about what you know about American health care,
well,
what you saw
they,
there.
Of course, have... very sophisticated medical care in Canada. You know, if you look at the numbers in 1970, our healthcare system cost us about 7% of GDP, and so did Canada's. Canada went the single payer route. They started in Saskatchewan, and it spread across the country. Their cost now is about 11-12%, which is relatively high for a healthcare system around the world. You know, we're so much higher, but But, and their longevity in 1970s was about a year ahead of ours. Currently it's 3 years. So they've grown, they haven't grown cost as much as we have. They've managed to control cost, and they managed to do a much better job of population health. We're 19 out of 19 modern industrialized countries in terms of preventable death, preventable hospitalizations, because there are economic barriers here for about a third of the population to get the care that they need. So we're getting people into hospitals in acute situations. We don't need to do that.
I haven't asked about whether you were pro-single payer before the passage of the Affordable Care Act. When did you formulate that decision?
I was for passage of the Affordable Care Act with the public option. I felt that if we had a public option similar to Medicare, that companies like MCS, like my company, would have migrated to that because it would have because there's much less administrative cost associated. There's no profit associated with it. So when we lost the public option, and we lost it really when the Senate was controlled by Democrats. It's not a partisan issue here. It's both parties really haven't done the job responsibly for the American public.
Okay, of the calls lined up, Terry in Eugene wants to know if you'll be in Eugene. You've been in Eugene already, but there was no public screening. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, but it can be viewed online. The whole film is available
absolutely.
Online,
absolutely, yes. It's available at fixithealthcare.com. You could punch it up on your phone.
And you could have screenings for rooms full of people, whatever you want to do there.
That's right.
Let's go to Don in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Richard Master.
Thank you. I wonder if you'd go into a little bit of the political realities, considering the immense profits being made by the insurance companies and the drug companies and the power of the AMA. You know, what's the actual possibility of this, and their ability to scare people?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What are your chances?
All right. Good question there, Don. Thanks for that. So, you got some powerful interests that make money in the current system and don't want to change it.
That's correct. And actually, they're spending a tremendous amount of money in Washington to keep it the way it is. I mean, the system may be broke for us, but it's definitely working for them. So they're spending, if you just look at pharma alone, it's the leading entity that's for lobbying. They're spending about $230 million a year on lobbying, another $32 million on the average in the last few years on campaign contributions. About $400,000 per member of Congress every year for the last 15 to 20 years.
What was the number again?
$400,000 per member of Congress just from pharma. Now, what's the return on investment on that? Huge. You know, what did they get? They got $1 billion in the Affordable Care Act from the IRS to subsidize their part of R&D. You know, so this gentleman who just called in is correct. There are vested interests who are exerting tremendous amount of control in the Congress. And frankly, that's why we're out here, because we think that it can happen first, similar to Canada, in a state. And you do have organization in Oregon and a population that may be interested in this and clear thinking enough to work their way through it.
So are the groups that have brought you out here, Healthcare for All Oregon, the Main Street Alliance, and Physicians for National Health Program Oregon, are they committed to trying to get something to the legislature, trying to get something on the ballot?
Yes, they are. Actually, they have two pieces of legislation which anticipate a study they just this week have awarded a contract to the RAND Corporation to do a feasibility study. How would this work? And that's definitely a step forward. It's a 4 to 5 year effort, a strategy to ultimately get this done. And it's going to require the legislative, and may require also a plebiscite here because of the way it has to be financed.
Richard Masters, our guest on The Exchange, business owner, creator of the documentary Fix It, Healthcare at the Tipping Point. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange in the minutes we have left to talk about single-payer healthcare and the concept. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Len in Ashland writes, how about having private companies provide single-payer healthcare as a regulated utility using the same model as a natural gas-regulated utility? Government would control their profit margin and specifically the range of services provided. Their ability to negotiate costs with drug companies and others would better control costs.
Love it. I think that's a great idea. Let's take it away from traditional administration in government and set up an authority. You know, I was a volunteer chairman of the Bethlehem Authority in my community. Bethlehem Steel, as many people know, went bankrupt about 15, 20 years ago and left us with 22,000 acres of watershed land, two dams, and filtration plants that was serving mostly the steel plant but also surrounding communities. And we had to wrestle with $135 million of budgets and stuff like that. And what was amazing, and we brought it down to $85 million, the work that was done by this organization, and it was a separate authority. And the cadre of government employees, the engineers, the staff, just as efficient as my operation, I would at MCS, and I think with a tremendous esprit de corps.
To get back to Don's issue about political support for going to single payer, there is actually a political or former political figure who weighs in late in healthcare at the Tipping Point. So let's hear from a former Pennsylvania state legislator.
As a business owner and also as a former Republican legislator, I've said that conservatives should be supportive of single payer because it costs less.
Talking with corporate executives, a lot of them, I think, get this. They know what waste is. They wouldn't be running successful companies if they tolerated waste in their production system, and they can see the waste on the healthcare side. This crazy transactional system is costing them money without value.
Business, when they look at the single-payer model, will come quickly to the conclusion that it is the least expensive, the most supportive of a free market, and will have the most direct effect on their costs of operation.
So that voice at the end of that clip and at the beginning was Dave Stile, who served the lower house of the Pennsylvania legislature until 8 years ago, a Republican, but I took a look at it. It's a district with a pretty even mix of Republicans and Democrats, it appears.
Yes, Bucks County, the eight-term Republican and very respected figure, ultimately joined the reform movement for health care.
But did
and
he
the,
support
The other fellow was Don Berwick, who was Obama's first appointee as head of Medicare, Medicaid. He had a budget approaching $1 trillion and recognized that single payer was the way to go.
In Dave Stiles' case, I mean, it's easy to support something when you're not running for re-election again. I'm guessing he did not support single payer when he was in the Pennsylvania House of Representatives.
You know, Dave's a great guy, and we have had a lot of conversation. I'm not sure when he had his aha moment, but he does talk about being a legislator, having a local office, and having people walk into that office without insurance, and him being a humanitarian, a good guy, having to call around to hospitals and doctors to provide charitable service for these people. And he realized that this was something that we were not addressing as a society.
So it's hard to certainly imagine anybody currently serving in a legislature, particularly a Republican member of a legislature, certainly a Republican member of Congress, the national legislature, putting his or her neck out on this issue. And certainly not after the dozens of votes by Republicans to repeal Obamacare. So how does anybody in the movement see trying to get single payer started politically?
You know, certainly the Republicans have a tougher time. The Republicans, members of Congress, because they're being threatened by more conservative elements in the party that they would be Tea Partied, or they would be, you know, the financing would come in and they'd be primaried.
Yeah, a new verb, primaried.
Yeah, primary to death. So you know, and we come from a district where there is, quote unquote, a moderate Republican congressman, otherwise a pretty decent guy, but he's hamstrung. So you're right. You know, we've got to do something about the democracy. In addition, and that may be necessary to address if we're really going to get reform on the national level.
I'm not going to start rapping here, but we move from democracy to bureaucracy. And one of the major concerns I think that people have about single payer is like, oh, my goodness, we're going to have this huge government apparatus.
You don't have a huge thing. Well, no, you don't. You know, look at Medicare. Medicare has about 5,000 people, on the staff. They've got a $1 trillion budget now and 5,500. Private insurance, 500 and some thousand people on the telephone back and forth. What's the component, the bureaucratic component of in our hospitals? It's 26% of hospital revenue now is going to administration.
Because you have to have people handling the billing?
Handling the billing, handling these complex computer systems that cost a fortune. Tens of millions of dollars. This EPIC system is, I guess the standard for computerization in, across the healthcare system. Hugely expensive.
So, Richard Master, finally, were there surprises? I mean, you've made up your mind, it sounds like, a while ago, but were there surprises along the way to researching this
outrages.
Documentary?
There were outrages. I wouldn't call them surprises. Every rock you turn over here, the initial reaction is – how can we let this happen? You know, are we living in this country? Is this a democracy that we're living in? You know, how can we allow, these outrages? How can we allow our doctors to be second-class citizens now in the medical system? The medical system is really being run by commercial-type people in the hierarchy.
The film is called Fix It, Healthcare at the Tipping Point. It has been brought to Southern Oregon by Healthcare for All Oregon, Physicians for a National Health Program Oregon, and the Main Street Alliance in the person of Richard Master, who created the documentary and is featured in it as well. Public viewing tonight at 5:30 at the Inn at the Commons in Medford. It is free to the public and no registration required with a discussion following the documentary. Richard Master, thank you so much for joining us in The Exchange.
It's been a pleasure. I've enjoyed talking to you.
All right. Take care. Community.